thank Him enough. And the thing is, He's the one that did the saving. He's the one that did all the work. He did everything. Reached down into the pits and pulled me out of the clay.
We the glass.
That's it.
We just receive what.
Just yeah, pours it in.
As a matter of fact, He made the glass.
Yeah.
He
put it in the glass. Yeah, we just a vessel. A vessel that He's filled up. Before we get started in 2 Samuel tonight, I'm going to go to Deuteronomy for just a moment. And I know somebody's going to bring it up, so that's why I'm going to go there. But when we go to Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 14, when thou art come into the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee, and shalt possess it, and shalt dwell therein, and shalt say, I will set a king over me, like all the nations that are about me, thou shalt in any wise set a king over thee, whom the Lord thy God shall choose. One from among thy brethren shalt thou set king over thee. Thou mayest not set a stranger over thee, which is not a thy brother, but he shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt, or the end that he should multiply horses. For as much as the Lord has said unto you, ye shall henceforth return no more that way, neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart turn not away, neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold. And it shall be, when he sitteth upon the throne of his kingdom, that he shall write him a copy of this law in a book, out of that which is before the priests and the Levites, and it shall be with him, and he shall read therein all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God, and keep all the words of the law that are these statutes, do them, that his heart be not lifted up above his brethren, and that he turn not aside from the commandments to the right hand or to the left hand, to the end that he may prolong his days and his kingdom, he and his children in the midst of Israel. So we see here that God knew that one day they would put a king over Israel, and he had a rule already set in place of what that king should do. He shouldn't try to make himself rich by being king. He shouldn't think himself more important than any of his brethren, and he shouldn't multiply wives. And he says when he multiplied wives, meaning having a whole bunch of wives at one time, and the reason was that these wives would turn his heart from following after God, because as the old song goes, it's hard for a man to please more than one wife at a time. You just can't do it. You can't keep your business straight. And God, knowing this and wanting a king whose mind was set on God, a mind who was set on following after God, told them, says, don't have you more. And if you remember Solomon, he had like 700 of them. And the end of Solomon's story says, and his wives turned his heart from God. Now, in David's case, and we're going to find how he had at least maybe seven wives, David did. And most of his issues were that the sons from each wife assumed that they were the heir to be the king. Solomon was not the very first son. Absalom and Amon and those guys were some of the first ones. And if you remember, Absalom killed Amon because he raped his sister Tamar. And we're going to get into all those things if we keep on going here. So the issue of having more than one wife for a king was the fact that it would cause strife in the kingdom. One son thinking he should be in charge. If you remember, if you follow all the kings as they were became kings, they would kill off all their brothers and their cousins and their nephews. Anybody that might think that they would want to take heirship of the throne down the road, they made sure they annihilated all those folks. So if you didn't have but one wife and one son, or one wife and a son, son, son in a order, you'd have some, we know who the next king is going to be. We know who the heir is going to be. We know this. But because David had many, every one of the firstborn sons kind of assumed, I might be the one. I might be him. So when we go to 2 Samuel, we're in chapter 3. Now there was long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, but David waxed stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul waxed weaker and weaker. We already know that David's group was Judah and Abner and Abishai, all those guys. They had the other 10-11 tribes, or 10 tribes with them, and they were growing weaker and weaker. In other words, God wasn't helping them. God was helping David. God was helping Judah. And the tribes of Saul, they were all the people whose Saul's family was following after, got weaker and weaker. And into David were sons born in Hebron. And his firstborn was Amon of Ahinoam, the Jezreelite. And the second was Chileb of Abigail, the wife of Nabal the Carmelite. And the third, Absalom, of the son of Maach, the daughter of Talmiah, king of Geshur. So we see here we've got three sons already, and if we already know the storyline behind, all these sons knew about annihilated each other before it was over with. All these sons assumed that they should be more than what they were. And the fourth, Adonijah, the son of Haggith, and the fifth, Shephathiah, the son of Abithel, and the sixth, Ithuram of Eglah, David's wife. These were all born to David in Hebron. So when David settled down, he started having younguns as fast as you could have them. And he had sons. And right here he names like five wives, six wives, and they all had a son. And every one of those sons thought they should be heir or in the line for the throne. And every one of these sons did exactly what God says, don't multiply wives, don't multiply these things, because if you do, they'll turn your heart from God. Now David, we know, didn't turn his heart from God, but we do know that he did some things before it's over with that really got him in trouble with God. And it wasn't so much that he had more wives. I know people like to preach that, but he already had six wives. But the thing is, the seventh wife, or when he married Bathsheba, the biggest problem with Bathsheba is he committed adultery to get her. He didn't just go out and see a woman and marry her. He went out and committed adultery. And on top of committing adultery, which people would like to say, well, that's it, he also had a man murdered. So there was a lot more than just having an extra wife or two in the house. That was bad. That was bad enough. But he went out and committed adultery, which he didn't have to do, and he committed murder to cover it up. So there's a whole lot more to it. Well, he just had too many wives. Well, he already had six. We know that. But those six were supposedly legal wives that he got the right way. He went out, he saw them, he wooed them, he married them. But Bathsheba was not that way. And we'll get to that in time to come. It says here, and Saul had a concubine. Oops, let me back up. And it came to pass, while there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, that Abner made himself strong for the house of Saul. In fact, Abner sort of took advantage of the situation and thought he was more than he should have been. He was a good general, a strong general, a good fighting man. He was of age. It says, and Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah. And Ishbosheth said unto Abner, wherefore hast thou gone into my father's concubine? So Saul had many wives also, and many concubines possibly. But being that Saul's dead, and Ishbosheth undoubtedly didn't see that he was going to take Saul's wives to himself. But Abner, on the other hand, says, look, I'm going to just go in and take her and have relations with her. And Ishbosheth got upset about it. He says, who in the world do you think you are? That's my daddy's concubine. That's Saul's concubine. And so Abner and Ibbesheth all of a sudden have a disagreement between each other. Ibbesheth is where he is because of Abner. If it hadn't been for Abner, he would have never got a kingship or anything else, because he would have never got enough power together. But it says, you went into my father's wife. You went in and done the wrong thing. Wherefore hast thou gone into my father's concubine? Then was Abner very wroth for the words of Ibbesheth, and said, am I a dog's head? In other words, are you looking down on me like in disgrace, or am I that bad? I'm the one who set you on the throne. I'm the one who's protected you. I'm the one who's fighting for you. Am I a dog's head, which against Judah do show kindness this day unto the house of Saul, my father, and his brethren, and to his friends, and have not delivered thee into the hand of David? And thou chargest me today with a fault concerning this woman? And others, I have put you up as king. I have protected you from David. I have made you what you are, and you're going to accuse me in front of all these workers and all these people of being with her. Now, he doesn't admit exactly that he was with her or that he wasn't with her, but you're accusing me. You're saying I've done this thing, and I have done nothing but good to you, Ibbesheth. I have done nothing but good at putting you on the throne. I've done nothing but good for protecting you from David. And the only thing I really wanted was this girl, possibly. And then Abner says something he probably should not have said. So do God to Abner, and more also, except as God, as the Lord liveth, has sworn to David, even so do I to him. In other words, being that the Lord has set David on a throne, the Lord has, as we all know, over through the last whole book, we understand, everybody come to the understanding that God anointed David to be king. And now Abner says, you know what? I made a big mistake setting you up, Ibbesheth. I thought maybe I was doing right because I was kind of loyal to Saul and Saul's family and the Benjamites and all that. But you know what? As the Lord has sworn to David, as the Lord has set up David, because you have accused me of this thing with his concubine and made me look bad in front of these men and called me like the head of a dog, he says, I am even going to swear to David. I am even going to put allegiance to David. He says, even so do I to him also. In other words, if the Lord has set David up, even now I am going to put allegiance to David also. Undoubtedly, he wasn't afraid of Ibbesheth at all. Ibbesheth, even though Ibbesheth was the king, Abner says, you're not going to talk to me like that, boy. To translate the kingdom from the house of Saul and to set up the throne of David over Israel and over Judah from Dan even to Beersheba. In other words, I'm going to help David get established just like God has said. He went out and started gathering up the elders. He went out and started talking to all the peoples in each one of the tribes. He said, look, I made a mistake. David's supposed to be the king. Everybody knew David was supposed to be the king. He's out politicking. He's out doing what he ought to be doing. He says, look, I put Ibbesheth on the throne, but that was the wrong thing for me to do. I should have never done that. And he gets all the heads in agreement. And then he sets him up a meeting to go see David. And he says, he translated the kingdom from the house of Saul and set it over the throne of David, over Israel, and over Judah, even from Dan unto Beersheba. And he could not answer Abner a word against before he feared him. In other words, he's telling Ibbesheth, here's what I'm going to go do, bud. Because you have accused me of being with this concubine, because you have made me look bad in front of these soldiers, I'm going to go get all the tribes together, and I'm going to call them unto following after David. I'm going to overthrow you, and I'm going to do it by going to see David and saying, look, I can make you confederate with every single tribe out there. I can get them all to follow you, David. What you say? And we're going to have a meeting here in a few minutes. He says, look, Ibbesheth, I am going to do this because you have accused me. And he couldn't even say a word just because he feared him. I mean, what was he going to say to this big old soldier with a big old sword? You'll sit down and get right. Now, David might have said that to somebody, but Ibosheth wouldn't do that. And Abner sent messengers to David on his behalf saying, whose is the land? In other words, whose is the land? And saying also, make thee league with me. In other words, I know who the land belongs to. It's yours, David. We've been getting weaker and weaker and weaker, and you've been getting stronger and stronger and stronger. There is no doubt who the king's supposed to be. There's no doubt who the head's supposed to be. And he says, make you a league with me, and behold, my hand shall be with thee to bring about all Israel unto thee. He says, I know you're supposed to be the king. I know I messed up setting this man up over a kingship. I know I did wrong, but David, if you'll forgive me and make a league with me, I will go get every single tribe and get them in allegiance following you. That's a pretty good covenant. That's a pretty good covenant. He's got one tribe, Judah. And here's a man saying, I give you all the rest of Israel if you'll just make a league with me. Now, we understand Abner probably had his means and his ways. He probably figured he'd be set up in the kingdom. He'd be maybe a high general too, you know, and be in the courts and stuff like that. You know, men are men. Make thee a league with me, and I'll give you all of Israel. And David's sitting there saying, yeah, because that's what I'm supposed to be anyway, right? This is God working these things out. And he said, well, I will make a league with thee, but one thing I require of thee, that is, thou shalt not see my face except thou first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when thou comest to see my face. You remember Michal? The one that covered up the bolster and hid it and let him down with a rope out the window so he could escape? Well, Saul, in vengeance, married her off to another guy. He says, I'll fix this, David. I'll just go ahead and give her to some other old guy. David undoubtedly loved her a little bit. He loved her enough that he said, look, before I make a league with you, while you know where she's at, while you know everything about her, while you can get a hold of her while I can't, if you want to see me and communicate, for me to know you mean business, you're going to bring Michal to me, my wife. Or you're not going to see me at all. So he's going and he says, okie dokie. Bring me Michal, my wife, Saul's daughter, that when thou comest to see my face, and Beerahite, of the children of Benjamin, for Beeroth also was reckoned to the Benjamin. For the Beerahites, did I skip a chapter? Yeah, we done skipped three channels there. My pages are stuck. I knew that didn't look right. And David, there we go. And David sent messengers to Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, saying, deliver me. So Abner, he told Abner to bring him, but he says, I'm going to send a letter even to Ish-bosheth. I'm going to make sure that Ish-bosheth knows what I want. He says, sends a letter even to Ish-bosheth, Saul's son, saying, deliver me my wife. He didn't call her the other guy's wife. He said, my wife. He never got rid of her. My wife, Michal, which I espoused to me, for 100 foreskins of the Philistines. In other words, I pretty well just bought her. I own her. And I love her. And I want her back. And I paid the price for her. So he sends this letter off and says, I want Michal back. And Ish-bosheth sent and took her from her husband, even from Phaltriel, the son of Laish. So you can figure how he's feeling. He says, I've been married to her, and ain't no telling. He could have been married to her for 4, 5, 6 years now. He says, I've been married to her. I've even fell in love with her. And now all of a sudden, you're going to send me a letter or send some messengers, some soldiers, taking her. We're taking her over to David, whether he likes it or not. Now, what's he going to say? You know, I'm going to go whoop David. Yeah, right. The guy who whooped Goliath, right? He says, and so he sends and took her. Didn't say he asked for her. He took her from her husband, even from Phaltiel, the son of Laish. And her husband went with her along weeping behind her to Bahurim. Then said Abner unto him, go return. And he returned. So about halfway there, whatever, he's following along weeping and crying and pawing and whatever. And all of a sudden Abner says, look, dude. Now you could go on if you want to. It probably won't be good for you. Or you can go on back to the house now and just lick your wounds and be over it, because she's going to David whether you like it or not. And I don't think when you get to that kingdom, you moaning and groaning and pawing and a crying is going to do you a lot of good, because David got some boys over there that just might take you out. In fact, if he don't take you out, if you keep all this moaning and crying on before you follow me much farther, I'm going to take you out, because I'm tired of hearing it. Get over it. Now, I understand that's easy language for us to say, get over it, because this man may have loved her greatly. I don't know. But the thing is, it was beyond his control to keep her. The same thing when David sent his men to get Bathsheba. She could have kicked and screamed and hollered, but he was the king. What are you going to say to the king? No, I'm not coming. And so she kind of can have the excuse, well, I didn't want to, but he's the king. What was I going to do, right? David was guilty in all of it. There's no doubt about it. And Abner had communicated with the elders of Israel, saying, ye sought for David in times past to be king over you. In other words, you guys wanted David to take over, but it wasn't his time. You guys kept coming to David and said, we know that God's anointed you. We know that God's going to put you up. We know that you're a great leader. You go out and whoop the Philistines and everybody else every place you go. And you wanted to make him king, but you were afraid of Saul. You didn't have a convenient time. He says, but he went to all the elders, and he says, ye sought for David in time past. Why don't you stand up for him now? Now's your opportunity to say what you really think. Now's your opportunity to say what's really on your mind. Now's your opportunity to say, David, thou art king, and we're following you. Now then, do it. In other words, quit talking about it in secret in your tents and everywhere else. Quit thinking about what you wish you'd have done. Do it. God's already made him king. It's about time Israel made him king. Not just Judah, but Israel. He says, now then do it, for the Lord has spoken of David, saying, by the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel out of the hand of the Philistines and out of the hand of all their enemies. In other words, God's done said David's going to be the winner. Now, this is one of them pep talks from the coach. Look, this team's winning. Get on board with them, or you're going to be losers. He said, God's already said David's going to deliver me from the Philistines. David's going to deliver us from all of our enemies. David's going to be king over all Israel. David is going to prosper. You might as well jump on now and get to enjoying all the prosperity and everything that goes along with the kingdom being in the right order, as opposed to just kicking against the pricks, as we would say, and fighting this thing, because eventually, whether we like it or not, David is going to be totally in charge. He shall save the people from the Philistines and from and all the land from his enemies. And Abner also spake in the ear of the Benjamin, in other words, the tribe of Benjamin. And Abner went to and speak to the ears of David in Hebron all that seemed good to Israel and that seemed good to the whole house of Benjamin. In other words, he talked to Benjamin. He talked to all the other leaders. Then he goes to Hebron and he talks to David and says, here's what I propose, David. Here's what I'm going to lay down for you to do, David. Here is all we want from you, David. We want a king. We want someone we can follow. We want somebody who's brave and stand behind. He says he went to talk to all the elders and everybody else. And he did it. See, and all that seemed good to Israel, that seemed good to the whole house of Benjamin. And Abner came to David in Hebron and 20 men with him. In other words, he brought some of the elders with him. He didn't just go up in there by himself. He went up there with 20 elders with him. And David made Abner and the men that were with him a feast. In other words, David brought them on in. David gave them a feast. David listened to what they had to say. David gave them an ear to find out what was happening and what's going on. David made a feast for them and set them up as a high house in a state. And Abner said unto David, here's what I'm going to do, David. I'll rise and go and will gather all of Israel unto my Lord the King. In other words, as soon as I understand that we've got this thing going on, this covenant between you and me, when I walk out of here, David, my whole duty is to get everybody in every tribe to follow after you. I get everyone from Israel to follow my Lord, and he calls him my Lord, the King, that they may make a league with thee, and that thou mayest reign over all that thine heart desireth. And David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. In other words, he didn't have any constrictions on him or restrictions on him. He didn't say, oh, now if you come back, I'm going to kill you. He sent him away in peace to go take care of what he said he was going to go do. Go talk to all these elders. Say, look, I went to see David. I've sat down with David. David threw a feast for me and 20 guys. We made this covenant. Now, guys, here it is. It's on a silver platter for you. Accept David as king and it's going to be great. Reject David as king and it's going to get bad. Because God has already said David is going to prosper. And he sent him away in peace. And behold, the servants of David and Joab came from pursuing a troop. Now Joab's been out fighting with the Philistines or some robbers or some thieves or whatever. Joab's been out doing the duties of the thing, and he comes in from pursuing a troop. And he brought in a great spoil with them. But Abner was not with David in Hebron, for he had sent him away and he was gone in peace. In other words, in between this one coming and that one going, God worked that out pretty good, didn't he? They didn't hit each other face to face right there. But anyways, while Abner's going out this gate, Joab and his guys are coming in this gate, and they done whooped a bunch of people, bringing in a whole bunch of spoils. They're all excited. They're all happy. They're all ready to share this. Everything is going good as far as Joab's concerned. And Joab and all of his hosts that was with him were come, and they told Joab, saying, now here's where it went bad for Joab. He's sitting here rejoicing and happy. He done won a bunch of stuff. He's done whooped a bunch of people. And as soon as he walks in the gate, somebody says, oh, by the way, Joab, Abner the son of Ner came to the king, and he has sent him away, and he has gone in peace. Now Joab, just about a chapter back, his brother was killed by Abner. Just about a chapter back, Asael was killed with a spear. Just about a chapter back, Joab and Ishbosheth said, we're going to never let anything happen until we kill Abner. And now he gets told, oh, by the way, Abner was just here with the king. Abner and the king sat down and had a feast. Abner and the king done made a deal. And I could just see Joab just churning up and getting angry and getting mad and getting upset. He says, Joab came to the king and said, now he's pretty brave here, because now this is the same thing. Abner went to Ishbosheth, kind of bowed up and said, look, what are you talking to? Here's Joab going to run in there to see David. And Joab came to the king and says, what hast thou done? So what? Who are you? Am I not the king? But he doesn't say a word to him. He says, what hast thou done? Behold, Abner came unto thee. Why is it that thou hast sent him away, and he is gone quiet gone? Thou knowest Abner, the son of Ner. In other words, he said, you know who he is. That he came to deceive thee. In other words, he's trying to say, look, David, don't fall for this. David, He's trying to trick you, David. He's trying to find your weak spots, David. Joab hates Abner so bad. He says, I don't know what he's been trying to tell you, but whatever it is, he's sneaking in on you. He's trying to find out all your weaknesses and your faults and everything else. He says, you know, Abner the son of Ner, that he came in to deceive thee, and to know thy going out and thy coming in, and to know all that thou dost. In other words, once he gets a hold of the getting in here and walking around and everything else, when you decide to go out and make a ride somewhere or a battle somewhere or whatever, he's going to be able to tell all your enemies right where you're going. He's going to know everything you're doing, David. Joab despised Abner. I mean, you can't hardly blame the guy a little bit. I mean, he just killed his brother. But on the top of that, Joab might have been saying, now if Abner moves in here, who's going to be the top general now? Joab was a younger guy. Abner was an older, more experienced soldier, a more general kind of guy. You reckon maybe he might have been saying, if this Abner guy gets into the courts, he might just be above me. So some jealousy might even have been popping in here. He says, you know how this man is. And when Joab was gone out from David, he sent messengers after Abner. And he brought him again from the well of Sirah. But David knew it not. David didn't send after Abner. Joab sent after Abner. But Joab says, the king would like to see you, Abner. He sort of stretched it a little bit. I'd like to see you, Abner, but the king would like to say some other things to you, and I'm sure that's how it went. I'll send this messenger over there, get him stirred up, get him to come back. And so he brought him back, but David knew it not. So it means here, David, while he knew about Abner and the deal he was making with Abner, he didn't know anything about Joab calling David back. And when Abner was returned to Hebron, Joab made him at the gate. But Joab's talking sweet and kind and humble sounding. He says, and he took Joab aside in the gate to speak unto him quietly. He says, you murderer! No, he says, Abner, I hear you've been with the king. Abner, let's go over here and sit down and have us a wine or something, and let's discuss what you've been doing with the king. And he acted real quiet and real friendly and real nice to him. And as soon as he got him just out of the gate a little bit where nobody could see too good, says he smote him under the fifth rib. Where did Abner smote Asa? Under the fifth rib. He made sure that he killed Abner in such a manner that it was just like Abner had killed Asa. He made sure that he died the same kind of death. He says, he smote him under the fifth rib and he died for the blood of Asa, his brother. In other words, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. He was kind of the Old Testament law, wasn't he? You kill my brother, I'm killing you. That's it. And afterwards, when David heard it, now at the end of this book, when Absalom becomes king, not Absalom, Solomon becomes king, he's going to tell Solomon, you take care of Joab for what he did. Right here's where David should have took care of Joab for what he did. See, David, there's a lot of things that David should have did that he didn't quite do. Just like when one brother raped a sister, he should have handled that deal right then and there. But he let things linger on and go on. Because David wouldn't grab the bull by the horn sometimes, that's what caused most of David's troubles. It says here, and afterwards when David heard it, he said, I and my kingdom are guiltless. And he made sure that the people in the court and other men heard this. I and my kingdom are guiltless before the Lord, for even from the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. In other words, I didn't send Joab to do this. I didn't send Joab to kill Abner. I didn't even know he was thinking about this. I didn't even say, tell me what you're going to do and then hide it. He says, I didn't even know he was going to do it at all. He says, I was totally guiltless. I never even crossed my mind that he's going to call Abner back up here and kill him. I knew he hated him. I knew he didn't trust him. But I didn't sanction no murder of him or killing of him. He says, let it rest on the head of Joab. In other words, Joab's the one that did this bad thing. Joab's the one that sanctioned this murder. Joab, and it was murder. It wasn't like in the battle. When Abner killed Asa, it was in the middle of a fight. In fact, he told Asa, you turn to the left and fight with that guy. You turn to the right and fight with that guy. Quit falling after me because I'll have to kill you, boy. Right here, he didn't give that warning. Joab didn't say, I'm after you. In fact, Joab just sort of reached around, old buddy, pal, friend kind of thing, and just, he murdered him. It wasn't in the battle. Abner never pulled his sword, never retaliated. He never saw it coming. And he died. Let it rest on the head of Joab and on all his father's house. Not just on Joab, but every member of his family from now on, his father's house. And let not fail from the house of Joab one that hath an issue, which could mean disease of some type, or that is a leper, or that leaneth on the staff, or that is blind, or that falleth on the sword, or that lacketh bread. In other words, he says, I'm cursing that family. Don't let none of them get healed from their leprosies or their sexual diseases or their blindnesses or anything like that. I want their family to be just loaded. Don't let it fail that they have these issues in their family forever. That's a pretty serious little statement there. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, slew Abner. Now, in the thing of this, it says Joab did this, but in this verse here, it says Abishai undoubtedly was confederate in this thing. Abishai either distracted Abner or spoke to him or did something. In the midst of Joab stabbing Abner, Abishai undoubtedly had some part in this thing, because it says here, so Joab and Abishai, his brother, together slew Abner, because he had slain their brother Asa at Gibeon in the battle. In other words, they were so fired up about their brother's death. Now, their brother died in battle. He could have turned left. He could have turned right. But in the heat of the battle, I understand he did what he did, but Abner did everything he could to keep from having to kill the boy. He said, go over there. Go fight with this one. If you don't, I'm going to have to kill you. But here, they've got Abner up in a gate. They got him in a walkway. They're trying to talk nice to him and sweet to him. And the whole idea is, while they're talking nice and sweet to him, they ain't saying, Abner, you might want to pull your sword. Abner, we're fixing to duel with you. Abner, we're fixing to fight with you. But while Abner's still got his sword in its sheath, one of them has their dagger or sword up under their coat, and they just reach up there and take him out. And David said to Joab and to all the people that were with him, rend your clothes and gird you with sackcloth and mourn for Abner, the king himself following the buyer. In other words, to prove that I wasn't part of this, I'm going to go ahead and rend my clothes. And I'm telling all of you to rend your clothes, put you on some sackcloth, and we're going to follow after Abner to where they're going to bury him at. We're going to follow the buyer. We're going to not eat. We're not going to do anything. He says, and they're going to follow after in sackcloth, mourning for Abner, and King David shall follow the buyer, and the buyer of Abner in Hebron. And they buried Abner in Hebron. And the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. Now, David did this, first of all, because I think he did it out of sincerity, but also, if he had not have done this, the word would have spread to those other 10 tribes. The king was part of killing Abner. The king let him come in and made a league with him just so he could kill him in private. And the king knew what he was doing, but this way he says, and all the people saw him weeping and crying and moaning. And you know how people like to talk. These people went to every place and they said, but you don't understand, the king was crying. The king was weeping. The king was upset that Abner was dead. The king wasn't rejoicing over Abner being dead. The king was upset. He felt for the man. He had no part in his murder. In fact, he says everybody's going to weep and put on sackcloth and mourn the man. And he cried over him. And the king lamented over Abner and he said, dieth Abner as a fool dieth. And I don't think he was calling Abner a fool there, but Abner let down his guard. Abner, for just a minute, didn't realize he was standing within the enemy. He was surrounded by Joab, and he was surrounded by Abishai, and he didn't even put a thought to his head, I need to back up to the wall and watch these guys. I know they're talking nice and all this, but I just killed their brother a week or two ago. He died a fool because he didn't have his guard on. He died a fool because he just assumed that he was safe in the gate. These men wouldn't kill me in the gate, right? Right. Right there in the middle of town. Just stuck him to the wall. Thy hand was not bound, nor thy feet put into fetters. As a man falleth before the wicked men, so fell thou, and all the people wept again over him. In other words, he could have pulled out his sword if he had been paying attention. He could have even fought back if he had been paying attention, but he let these guys sneak up on him and get him. And when all the people came to cause David to eat meat while it was yet day, you see, a lot of that fasting we talk about, it's only during the day. David swears, saying, so do God to me and more also, if I taste bread or aught else till the sun be down. In other words, if I start fasting and having a good time and partying before the sun go down, I need to be just like Abner. So he let the people know he wasn't there for the killing. He didn't want the killing to take place. And if anything took a partying and all kind of things started happening while this man was still being buried on his burying day, he needed to be dead also. And all the people took notice of it. And it pleased them, as whatsoever the king did pleased all the people. In other words, if David wants to fast all day and David wants to mourn, if David's good with it, we're good with it too. And they all fasted with him because it pleased the people. And all the people in all Israel understood that day that it was not the king of the king to slay Abner, the son of Ner. In other words, it wasn't his plan. It wasn't his idea. He did that not even on his mind. And the king said unto his servants, know ye not that there is a prince and a great man fallen this day in Israel? In other words, what he was about to do, Joab just really put a mess to it. This man was fixing to join all the tribes of Israel together. That was his plan. Bring all the tribes into one head under God and under David. One thing, but Joab and his brother, out of anger and out of vengeance, did their best to ruin this thing. And I am this day weak. He lost a good man. He lost a good general. I am this day weak, though anointed king, and these means the son of Zeruiah be too hard for me. In other words, these guys just went beyond their duties. They went beyond where they should have been. But undoubtedly, David feared them a little bit like Ibosheth feared Abner, because David didn't take them out and have them hung or killed or anything like that. He said, these men be too hard for me. And then he says, the Lord shall reward the doers of evil according to his wickedness. Now we understand that when Solomon becomes king, he takes care of Joab. I can't remember, and I should, but I don't remember if Ebeshef was still alive at that time or not. But I guarantee you that the Lord brings vengeance on these. He says, I won't kill you. I won't hang you. But the Lord one day is going to get you for just what you've done and what you've been up to doing. I want you to understand, it wasn't my plan. It wasn't my thoughts. But the Lord rewards you. Some people get that reward thing messed up. Well, reward means I'm getting something good, right? Not necessarily. The Lord reward the doers of evil according to his wickedness. So every time we see the word reward and award and things like that, something we go, oh boy, it's going to be good. Maybe not. If you ain't doing good, then your reward is not going to be great. Well, it might be great. It's going to be great like you want it. So there we go. Abner, because he gets accused of being with Saul's concubine, gets his feelings hurt, decides to turn around and follow David, join the whole tribes of Israel together in one thing, and then for anger and vengeance, Joab and his brother kill Abner and near about run the whole thing. Just like that. And that's what chapter 3 was like in 2 Samuel. Next week, we'll be in chapter 4. Brother Lucian, would you dismiss us, please?